So long, inflation. Hello, recession.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. High prices probably aren't going to be a problem for a while. Consumer prices were flat in September for the second straight month. That's nice, but it's only because the economy's in a tailspin. Industrial production fell almost 3% last month. That's the biggest drop since December 1974. And the latest unemployment data paints a pretty ugly picture for the job market. But the cost of borrowing between banks is starting to come down slowly. And that's what the bailout was supposed to accomplish, getting banks to lend again. So Wall Street is feeling pretty good about that this morning. So far, the Dow is up 133 points, 1.5%, to 8,712. The NASDAQ has gained 35, 2%, and the S&P 500 is up 15 points. Overseas, stocks had a terrible day. Japan's Nikkei fell 11%, responding to the Dow's big plunge yesterday. European shares are down 2% so far. No price is dropping faster than oil. Consider this. In July, the price of oil was $147 a barrel. This morning, it's half that, $72. More from Ashley Milne-Tite.
Consumers and businesses started to cut back on their use of oil when prices shot up. It was then that demand began to weaken. Daniel Yergin is author of The Prize, The Epic Quest for Oil, Money and Power. He says even before the big run-up in crude prices, the economy was faltering. And now...
The great global economic growth that propelled oil and other commodity prices up for 5 years is over.
But he says it's not just global demand that influences oil prices.
You know, the financial markets have come to be a very important part of the oil market. And as hedge funds liquidate their positions, as they stop trading commodities, that is clearly one of the factors in the oil price.
Some blame speculators for driving the price of oil to records. Yergin says many of those traders are less active and others have disappeared from the market altogether. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The airlines must be loving the dropping price of oil. Although this morning Southwest reported its first loss in 17 years, and it's because Southwest is losing money on fuel hedging. It bought fuel expecting oil prices to stay high. More on the airlines from Rachel Dornhill.
Oil prices half of what they were 3 months ago? You'd think executives in the fuel-dependent airline sector would be pulling out the drinks cart to celebrate. But aviation business professor Richard Gritta says you've got to put it in perspective.
And the price of aviation fuel, which was over $4, is still not down to what it was in the heyday of the airlines in the mid and late 1990s when it was about 61 cents.
Of course, the Boeing 747 in the room is the economy. George Novak with Innova Aviation Consulting says, yes, any lower fuel costs are good news.
However, at the same time, these air carriers are facing diminishing demand in a recessed economy. So it's really just a symptom of a greater problem in the economy and something that will greatly affect air carriers.
Novak says airlines use models to lock in the lowest fuel prices to meet their future needs. But he says with all the uncertainty in the markets, those models are as confused as everybody else. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, October 16th on Marketplace.org. Another bank bailout is underway, this one in Switzerland. The Swiss banks UBS and Credit Suisse are getting big piles of money, but not just from the government this time, as Megan Williams reports.
Switzerland's biggest bank, UBS, will get a $5 billion injection from its government. It will also get to pass on $60 billion of bad assets to the country's central bank. But the next largest Swiss bank has turned to global investors instead. Credit Suisse has raised about $10 billion, some of it from a major shareholder in Qatar. ING analyst Alain Chibozo says most of the shareholder risk in the banks is over.
They have already depreciated a lot of the assets, so we shouldn't expect much more further losses.
Chibozo says now that it's clear the banks won't go under, their dividends will likely rise in the new year. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Even banks that don't go under might have to think about mergers. In fact, as the economy weakens, a lot of companies are going to have to think about it. Here's John Dimsdale.
Banks are doing it, airlines are doing it, and pretty soon auto companies might too. There are plenty of downtrodden companies that are looking like good takeover targets.
At these kinds of prices, there are lots of opportunities out there.
Tom Dusterberg is the president of Manufacturers Alliance. His industry is in recession, he says, but it has one advantage: strong export earnings from a weak dollar.
They're in a better position to do acquisitions. There's less competition from the financial buyers, the private equity players who depend so much on borrowed money, which is dried up for them.
Some consolidation can be expected in every down economy. Edward Prescott's research on business cycles won him the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2004.
There's going to be some negotiations, some give and take. And sometimes when there's rougher times, you need fewer firms in an industry.
How many fewer firms depends on how rough the times get. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
We talked yesterday about how consumer spending has fallen off a cliff and how bad this upcoming holiday shopping season could be for the retail industry. Whenever Americans stop spending, companies all over the world feel the pain. From Tokyo, Marketplace's Scott Tong has this report.
In Tokyo's financial district, passers-by check out the outdoor stock ticker as an ad for the lottery blares. No one feels like gambling today. This elderly man, Mr. Masuzawa, says the market reflects Japan's export-led economy. It needs Western consumers.
It's a global money game, a global economy, and Japan is not a self-sustaining country. It relies on imports and exports. So this will affect the economy in the long term.
A few steps away, this building material supplier is shaking his head.
Japan's bubble days from the 1990s only affected us, but this is a global bubble. It's also interconnected and so complicated, it's hard to see the bottom.
The port of Yokohama already feels it. In August, Japan had a rare trade deficit, just the second in 26 years. In fact, the world's number two economy is now shrinking. Masaki Takeda makes parking brakes for the big manufacturers like Honda and Toyota.
We're having second thoughts about any new investments we're making. We're very careful because things are uncertain.
Asian markets fell across the board today, which makes sense if you think of the region as an interconnected factory. Take that laptop computer you just decided not to buy. The display comes from Japan, where stocks fell 11% today. The chips are designed in Korea, down 9% today. And the workers who snapped it all together live in China, down 4%. Now, if the Asian economies tank, here's how it haunts you. Weaker consumers out here may stop buying American exports, particularly agricultural products. Will Hess is with the economic forecasting firm Global Insight.
Whether consumers in broader Asia will rescue the global economy, I think might be a little bit unrealistic to expect that.
For now, a global recession remains an if. But today's panic scenario is that a fragile U.S. consumer could take everyone down. In Tokyo, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
CNN isn't known for being funny. Well, except maybe Jeannie Moes. But CNN is going to try to do comedy now. From Atlanta, Susanna Capilouto reports.
Every Saturday night, comedian D.L. Hughley will take a comedic look at the week's news. The CNN show will dish out humor on everything from politics and entertainment to sports and pop culture. Kelly McBride with the Poynter Institute says the move to be funny is very calculated.
Every newsroom in America is looking for ways to expand and connect with new audiences.
McBride says the hardest part for Hughley will be to stand up to competition.
One of the biggest questions is whether CNN can do this on the same level that, say, Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert is doing it. That's the biggest threat.
The Daily Show and The Colbert Report on Comedy Central often use CNN clips to spoof the day's news. Hughley's show, however, is not scheduled to use such video. In Atlanta, I'm Susanna Capoluto for Marketplace.
Time to visit with our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, as we continue with Fallout, our special coverage of the financial crisis. Chris, we've been getting a lot of emails asking why we aren't hearing from bank CEOs, stepping forward, taking some responsibility, offering solutions. So where is the bank leadership?
What leadership? Where are they? And it's even made me almost start to admire the Japanese custom. And I always thought there was a little bit of hypocrisy there where the head of the organization or the company that had gotten into trouble, you know, will apologize before the nation and take responsibility. You know what? I think it's a good practice. I'd like to see Lloyd Blankfein and John Thain and John Mack and James Diamond and Robert Kelly and all these heads of these banks that are getting a capital infusion from the U.S. government to take some responsibility. I think that Ben Bernanke has taken responsibility. I think Paulson has taken responsibility. You and I can have a discussion and an argument about whether they've done the right thing, but there's no question that they have been exercising leadership.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that these bank leaders are keeping their mouths shut?
The main reasons are they don't know the scale and the scope of the problems that they're still dealing with that they oversaw. And I think that they're genuinely worried about their own pocketbooks. That's what they're most worried about. I now believe that. It's the only way to explain the actions that they're taking. I don't see any of them putting their own money into these companies. It's one of the reasons why people are admiring Warren Buffett. He's putting money into GE. He's putting money into Goldman Sachs. He's taking a risk, and he's saying, I believe we're going to be okay. I believe we're going to come out of this.
What really chafes me, Chris, about this whole situation is they made all this money, and they did a terrible job at their
job.
Okay. And now we heard there was a big meeting with a bunch of bank leaders on Wall Street, and all they seem to talk about is deregulating, things like that, tax breaks. I mean, give me a break.
And we don't want those class action lawsuits. You know, we've got to have some barriers there. What universe are they living in? Who are they talking to? One of the ironies of this whole situation is that there are many people in government who have stood up and exercised leadership in the private sector, which we have worshipped for the past three decades. We're not finding a whole lot of leaders out there.
Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent.
Thanks a lot.
Let us know what you think. You can log on to our website, marketplace.org, and share your thoughts. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.